Hi, and welcome to the Human Side of Business podcast. I'm Ange McCabe, CEO and co-founder of Intuitive Performance. I'm a performance coach, HR professional, whole person leadership facilitator, and your host. The Human Side of Business podcast is fueled by the genuine curiosity to understand how personal characteristics and skills can be leveraged to drive individual and team performance, tangible outcomes, and ultimately organizational success within business. Each podcast is devoted to sharing knowledge, expanding our learning edges, and exploring the trends in corporate culture towards growing the emotional intelligence of organizations. I'm so glad you're here. Hi, everyone. And I'd like to give a warm welcome to Jason Scott. He is a talentless, real-life anti-hero who doesn't just talk the talk, he walks the walk. Growing up in the streets of Los Angeles with less than ideal parents, Jay learned early on that actions speak louder than words. I get goosebumps when I read this, by the way. After dropping out of high school at 17, Jay joined the Navy and learned firsthand that grit and courage could overcome any lack of talent. He embraced every opportunity to learn and eventually become a Navy rescue swimmer, jumping out of helicopters to save lives. Rewind two decades ago, Jay founded 120 VC to help people, leaders, and teams get things done that really matter. He's uncovered some universal truths along the way. Organizations are optimized for the results they're getting, and to get different results, humans need to perform their jobs differently. But here's the kicker about Jay. And what he says is that humans crave success in all areas of their lives, and nobody knows how to be successful doing their job differently. That's where leaders come in, to help people feel safe to experiment and slay new ways of working. Jay Scott is the epitome of the anti-thought leader, proving that leadership isn't about being the most talented or successful person on the team. It's about helping your team members define and deliver success. If you surround yourself with talented people and inspire them to reach their potential, the leader doesn't need to be talented. They just have to play for the team. Jay Scott is a regular guy who's proven that actions speak louder than words. And in my green room, I found out he just drives a truck. Jason also has spent over 20 years leading global transformational efforts for DirecTV, Trader Joe's, Blizzard Entertainment, Riot Games, Sony Pictures, ResMed, AAG, Universal Music Group, Rimmelty, and others. He's an author of two Amazon best-selling books, It's Never Just Business, It's About People, and the Irrelevant Guide to Project Management, an Agile Approach to Enterprise Project Management. He's a keynote speaker with 5-star reviews, and he has a passion to mentor and train a new generation of leaders to lead him to the start of Transformational Leadership Academy, where he leads a 14-week certification program. So,
oh my God.
Jason, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here, Ange. And I got to talk to somebody about that intro. It was way too long. I started holding my breath. But I'm sure you guys can work that out. I apologize to your audience for that in advance. But yeah, let's just talk about driving trucks and being regular people.
Right. Absolutely. And that's what I enjoy. And as a background story to everyone, this has been a year in the making. So I'm equally as excited to have you here, Jason, to hear about your insights around leadership and specifically, how do we bring up leaders in organizations for success, essentially, right? It's more so about the how-to. Two things in your bio that really grabbed me. One was around the premise that leaders have the responsibility to give the environment and allow people to learn and grow, basically in my own words. And the other piece of it was around the fact that leadership really isn't a title. That's kind of what I was gleaning in from it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's not. I mean, I don't know. Okay. Do you remember when you got your first title? Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was like the director of something, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? And I was like, cool. I'm the boss now. Like, you know, I'm super big for my britches. And the first thing I did was like a lot of really bad, embarrassing things. Like I didn't know how to get people to follow me. I didn't know how to establish vision. I was the opposite of what my bio just said. I thought it was all about me, and leadership isn't about the leader. Leadership is about the team. And so, I mean, I feel bad because most people, you know, they go into the workforce as to learn how to do something, or they come into the workforce with a skill.
Yes.
And they work really hard as an individual contributor, and then they get promoted, and there's very few places to go where you get good mentorship or good training on how to be an effective leader. And I think the model that we're used to is, you know, the you're a boss, so you're the big baller shot caller. It really does not drive good results, right? It makes people frustrated with you and, you know, either shuts them down in their job or has them looking for a job, but it certainly doesn't motivate them to reach for their potential.
Absolutely. So let's take a step back. Help me fill in the gaps. How did you go from a rescue diver in the military to an established leader, author, and professional speaker when it comes to leadership?
That's a really long story, but essentially, cliff notes. So, you know, I was in the Navy for 6 years, 2 months, and 23 days. I think I was 24 years old when I left the Navy. I joined at 17 years old to get away. My mom happened to be the executive assistant to the chief information officer at Universal Studios. And I was in IT in the Navy. That was my job. And I ended up becoming a rescue swimmer because they couldn't get anybody through school and there was no rescue swimmers on the ship. So we couldn't leave port and people kept washing out. So the skipper opened it up to everybody. And, you know, I was a competitive swimmer growing up. So I ran faster and swam faster than anybody else. And then just, you know, in swimmer school, I was like, I just don't quit. I mean, that's the secret to getting through rescue swimmer school or any sort of special forces training, like just kind of refuse to quit. And that is where the grit comes in from my story. But then I leave the Navy. I get a job because my mom's the executive assistant. I work really hard there for 4 years. Again, same thing, willing to commit, willing to experiment, like willing to volunteer for things that I, you know, I thought I could do, but didn't really know how to do. And then it worked out. And so literally 4 years I'm there at 27 years old, I started a company that I had no business starting. I still have my very first business plan. And I thought I was going to provide CEO and COO and CFO leadership services to companies. Here I am like a high school dropout, did 6 years in the Navy, have 4 years at Universal Studios. And I'm thinking people are going to hire me to do that. So I don't know. Maybe I was ignorant. Maybe I was crazy. Maybe I was arrogant. I don't know.
I would say audacious. Nothing wrong with that.
Did you say audacious? That's a good word. So I was very lucky because my first client was the chief information officer at Sony Pictures. He hired me, not directly, but indirectly, as a project manager to come in and pull their portfolio of projects together. And so I was independent for like 3 years while I was trying to hustle and get the company's name out there. And so fast forward to the cliff notes, you know, I convince people to hire people from me. I document and how to, I start training my team members, just doing everything that I can to serve my clients and build a healthy business. And somewhere along the way, going from, I started 120 VC because I was going to be the best and I was going to make a lot of money. Therefore, it was all about me. And so my clients were just super lucky that I was really good at what I did because they benefited, to having truly authentic communications, like collaborative conversations with people versus sort of driving them to get the outcomes. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I would just accidentally be human and I would just accidentally have collaborative conversations, and that led to better results. Moreover, it felt better. Like being that driver all the time, like riding people, it feels terrible. It felt terrible for me. Mm-hmm. I know it felt terrible for them because, you know, we had a good enough relationship, the vast majority of them told me. And that's where I sort of shifted to realizing that a leader plays for their team members. And when their team is successful, the leader is successful. The leader plays for their customers. And so, you know, I accidentally landed on this journey of not it not being about me, me playing for my clients. And it really transformed my relationship with my clients. It went from we hire Jay because he gets stuff done to we hire Jay because we trust that he's playing for us and he gets stuff done. And the same with my team members. And then, you know, I stumbled on all the great books like Simon Sinek's Start With Why, John Mackey and Rosh Isoda's Conscious Capitalism, just, you know, all the stuff that talks about servant leadership. And that, you know, that my journey to be an effective leader has been long and hard and arduous. And so that's how I started speaking. To this day, I'm embarrassed about so many of the things that came out of my mouth when I got my first team at Universal Studios. Like, and I can never find those people and apologize to them. So, but if I can help up and coming leaders, right? Anybody responsible for a team, get it right, like lead effectively with compassion, then, you know, just call me because I'm happy to show up. I'm happy to share.
And I think there's a lot of golden nuggets in here, and I'm going down a bit of a rabbit hole, but bear with me because it has intention to lead us back to how to turn employees into leaders. When and what was that intentional switch for you? Like I'm hearing you that you're stumbling upon these things and you just happen to be human, but when did it become like an aha moment to say, this now needs to be intentional for me to be that true quote unquote leader?
Somebody recently just pointed out to me that's been on this journey with me. His name is Jim Adams for a long time that it's when my son was born. So it was like, is when he saw the shift. So that was about 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, I had always felt like I could do more, like that I'm here for a short period of time and I could really do something big or contribute, leave some sort of positive lasting change, but I didn't. And it would make me really sad because I didn't know what that was going to be. Like there wasn't anything that I was super passionate about. And so 12 years ago, I guess a couple of things happened. Like I was having these, you know, I was shifting my style to play for my team members, play for my customers. My son was born and I walked into a Whole Foods and there was this yellow book that said Conscious Capitalism, which are not two words that you would normally see together. In fact, it's here on my bookshelf.
Yeah, Conscious Capitalism. I was going to say that behind you. Yeah.
Yeah. And because, you know, capitalists, they're, you know, according to some political people, they're really terrorists and they're taking advantage of everybody. And, you know, we haven't in this country had any faith in big business for decades, right? And so I see this book, Conscious Capitalism, written by John Mackey, the founder of Whole Foods, and Rosh Isoda. And I thought I'd read it and I learned some great stuff about it. But I remember then reading the book, being on vacation in Kauai with my like wife and my newborn baby. And I spent the whole time thinking, what's the purpose of my company? What's my purpose? And so that, 12 years ago, I guess, I got super intentional about becoming the best leader I could possibly be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's amazing. Is it okay if I go a little bit deeper with you?
Sure.
What characteristics can you point to say, I swapped this for this to be an intentional leader?
I swapped the ideal that I needed to be talented. I needed to be talented to be successful. I needed to be the smartest person in the room, that I needed to be in control to be successful. Mm-hmm. Two, control is an illusion. Leadership isn't about me. And if I trust my team and verify, right? Like I want to set them up for success. Hey, we get super clear on what it is that we're going to do, and then ask them, like, talk it through how they're going to do it. Mm. And when we both, that's called active listening.
Yes.
And when we both think what they're going to do is going to work, I've helped them architect their own roadmap to a shared goal. I've helped them think it through. I've helped them grow because, you know, if they throw out the steps or an approach that I think isn't going to work, I'll challenge. Well, why would you do that? Or what will you do if this happens? Right. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not telling them how to do their job, right? So trusting that I've hired people that want to be successful because fundamentally all humans want to be successful. Like, yes. You remember that time you signed up to do something, you were really excited about it. You went and you worked really hard for 3 days and you came back and dropped it back off to the requester and they looked at it and they looked at you and they were like, Ange, this isn't what I asked for. Do you remember how you felt in that moment? Like one
Absolutely.
Word.
Absolutely. Horrible. I felt horrible. Sick in my stomach.
I asked that question on every podcast and I asked that question of every large and small audience. So nobody ever says I didn't care. Everybody, it's either shame or frustration, yeah. Right? So this is how I absolutely know that human beings fundamentally want to be successful. And so if I trust them, they're going to open up to me and not hold the cards really tight, right? And I believe that you give trust to earn trust, coach them through, right? And that trust that if it doesn't work, they did everything that they possibly could to make it work.
Where so, they're at now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. From where they're at now. And so that's kind of where it all starts. Shifting from it's all about me to it really is all about them. Shifting from control to trust, but verify. This is really important because, you know, trusting that people just know how to do everything is kind of silly because we don't, right? Human, yeah. If human beings didn't need leaders, I wouldn't have a job. Right. But trusting in that we can get there together, they'll trust you back and they'll play for you. And therefore control is not necessary.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And gleaning in there, help me understand this because I know I can only speak for myself, but wondering if this resonates. When I was at a director and VP level and I had the premise that leadership meant your title, that meant the tasks that you do, that meant how you're teaching people and how you're controlling people. When I was in that seat, it was all about the, am I enough? Am I smart enough? Is this yeah. enough? Am yeah. I doing it first? Like all yeah. of those micro imposters that can kind of come up in leadership. And what I'm hearing you say is that leaders need to do the work to stand them down, to put them aside and be able to really focus on giving versus receiving. Because when we're in receiver mode, that means that we're in that mode to my mindset. We're in that mode of, hey, my cup isn't filled. I need you to validate me. I need you to validate that this is smart and that this is right and that or correct or the best or first two or strategic or innovative, whatever. When in actuality, our real responsibility stepping into leadership is to be that intentional person that can sit back, be the last one to speak, be the dumbest one in the room in some circumstances. I don't really like that word, but that's a blunt way of saying it.
Well, it's not, you're the coach.
Yes.
What you want to do is you want to leverage the collective IQ.
Yes.
So when you were talking about, I'm the receiver, it's all about me, I need my cup filled. What you were talking about is you were playing for self. You were playing for you,
Absolutely.
Which by the way, is nature, not nurture. We're wired to do that, right?
Absolutely.
We are not biologically set up to be successful leaders. The problem though is yeah. if you operate like for self, you're teaching your team to do exactly the same thing and you won't yeah. have a team. You'll yeah. have a whole bunch of potentially capable people, but you are not operating like a team player. Therefore, you're teaching them not to operate as a team. They're like, oh, you know, Ange or Jay, they're playing for themselves. So we've got to look out for ourselves.
Yes. And oftentimes what I've seen in past coming out of that fog, companies would identify it as internal competitiveness. Like they'd make jokes about it and such, which fair game in some circumstances, but in other circumstances, that was just a normalizing name for individuals to operate for self versus operating for the team, whether known or not unknown. So I really thought that was a golden nugget that you had mentioned, Jason, with regards to the things that you had organically grown through to be a giver, not a receiver when it comes to leadership.
All right. And also, so on my journey of servant leadership, I almost put myself out of business. I misinterpreted servant leadership as, you know, like build everybody up, right? Like just be kind to everybody and they'll deliver. And that's absolutely not true. It's absolutely not true. And they'll stop delivering for your customers. So on that message that it is the leader is all about like giving to the team so the team could be successful, but you cannot abdicate your responsibility to making sure that you are also successful, because I have sad news. You can't expect that to be reciprocated because you'll be really disappointed. It's very rare that you'll find team members. That's why that my therapist always says, the work is done by the enlightened. Okay. So if you're a leader that gets that you're there to enable your team to be successful, and when they're successful, you'll be successful. You're in an enlightened seat and you should start there. But don't take your eyes off the ball, because the vast majority of them will play to be successful, but it doesn't mean that they're going to play back to your success. So you have to make sure that they're successful first.
Yes.
And then you also have to make sure that their success is contributing to your success. Don't just assume that if they do it, you'll be successful. Just like that whole thing, if we build it, they will come. Yeah, that was in a desert. They meant in a desert, like in the middle of a desert where people were like dying for food and water. You know what I mean? Like, you put up an oasis.
It's a monopoly.
That's not how it works in Manhattan, right? Like, that's not how it works in Los Angeles, right? Like, just, people are inundated with, it's built. Where do I go? It's too many choices.
Yes, absolutely. And what was coming up for me when you were saying that, Jason, was, you know, to the effect of, it's very similar to sports. So you can be a team
player. I knew we were going to get there. Yes.
You can be a team player where it's for me. I want the assists. I want the goals. I want the stats. I want the numbers. But when you step up and you put a letter on your jersey, that equates to everything that you just described. The responsibility that you still have stuff to do, of course, you still need to be successful, but you're often thinking about your other players first before yourself. So it moves from being top scorer to maybe the top person that has assists, right? Like it kind of, you're stepping back a little bit and giving the autonomy to your team to step up.
Well, and that's exactly it. The question that you asked me at the beginning of the podcast today was, how do you turn your team members into leaders? Yes. And that comes right down to professional sports team dynamic. So that you took us to the sports analogy is perfect. The goal, everybody on the team's number one priority is winning the game, mm-hmm. right? Not, mm-hmm. I need to be successful. I need to look good, right? It's supporting the team. It's winning the game. Okay. Then second, they'll look good. They'll be successful. Right. And what do people like, the haters recognize the player that's out there playing for themselves. Mm. And the rest of the team sees that player that's out there playing for the rest of themselves. Mm-hmm. Right. And so this dynamic of how do you teach your team members how to be leaders? It's teaching them how to actually play for team. Teaching them how to work together. It's transforming a bunch of, like, managers all have direct reports. Executives all have direct reports.
Yes.
The vast majority of them operate like high-performing individual contributors, and they're leaving all of this potential success, this cultivation of the collective IQ on the table. And so as an example, there's this, you know, using the IT example, in technology, you'll have a chief information officer or chief technology officer, and they'll have like somebody responsible for networking, they'll have somebody responsible for infrastructure, somebody responsible for customer service, somebody responsible for application development. And you know, the head of the networking, all they're just like, I do networking, you know, like, I'm not worried about what's happening over here. But the problem is the infrastructure, the people that handle the data, if they're doing something new, they need the network team's help, right? And often, if they're just like, well, I don't care about you, all I care about is my thing, they don't play well together, and they're not a collaborative, high performing team. And so that whole notion of, and maybe I shouldn't have jumped to the IT story because, you know, it's a little, it might be a little far to reach, but I think the better way to say it is stay in your lane. That's not teamwork. No. Don't step on my toes. That's not teamwork. No. Hey, you know what? I'm going to lead this because this falls into my like vertical, even though you've got people on your team that might help. I don't want them involved. I want them out of here. These are very common things that you see in business, mm-hmm. right? And here's why, because they're back to that. It's about me. I don't want to collaborate with you because I don't want you messing me up. I don't want you dragging me down. I don't want you slowing me down. But the opposite always ends up occurring. Now, instead of working together, you know, it's like this childish sort of infighting that's taking place.
Absolutely.
So at the end of the day, drop titles. Titles don't matter. I'm the manager. I'm the executive. Here's the deal. If I'm the leader, I'm the coach. Okay. And the leader at any, like, meaning if I'm the executive or the manager, my job is that of the coach. Then if I've got somebody that's the head of marketing, and I've got somebody that's the head of sales, and I've got somebody that's the head of operations, here's the deal. If we're talking about something that is a marketing thing, like it's marketing, hey, because we have to talk about a marketing thing with operations. We have to talk about a marketing thing with sales. You know who the leader in that moment is? The person with the most knowledge about the thing that we need to accomplish. And that's going to be the marketing leader and the marketing thing. More importantly, what do? Leaders see what's next so the rest of us can make what's new. So if I'm the CEO, am I coming up with all the marketing ideas and taking them to the marketing leader? Or is the marketing leader ideally coming to me and saying, hey, Jay, I think we should do this. Or, hey, this thing just happened. I think we should do this. Mm-hmm. In that moment, who's the leader? The marketing, the head of marketing and the marketing team. They're the leader. We're going to follow them.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Just like on a, right? And now, in that case, I'm the coach. I'm the enabler. Also, here's the thing. Am I going to say, yeah, I'm going to fund that? No. I'm going to go to the CFO and I'm going to say, hey, marketing wants to do this thing. I'm in. I'm totally in. If I don't say that, the CFO is going to say, we're not going to spend the money. Marketing can go to the CFO and the CFO is going to tell them no. No, no. Right? So now I'm the cheerleader, not just the coach. I've got to go to the CFO and I'm going to be like, here's what marketing wants to do. Here's why I think it's a good idea. Do we have the money?
Absolutely.
The answer, by the way, from the CFO should always be like, no. Then you as the leader can say, well, what if we don't do
that, Jason?
Right. Maybe, okay, if you want the CFO to give you money, you tell them I'll cancel like five things. So if I don't do these five things, you'll give me the money,
that's
right?
Wise, pragmatic. Okay, fair.
So at any given moment, really my job as the CEO or the executive or the manager is to play that coach for the team. Like, hey, guys, collaborate. Hey guys, collaborate. Sometimes I'm going to come up with the idea. And in that case, like I'm the subject matter expert, therefore I'm the leader. When it's a marketing thing, you know, I don't want everybody to be like marketing wants to do this. So it's smart, right? All of us then do that active listening thing. Oh, hey, marketing, why do you want to do this? Because operations is going to be like, well, I've got to support marketing. So I need to understand why and how this benefits the company, right? Because I've got to go back to my team and then ask them to do work, right? So leadership really is teamwork. It's all about the collaboration. And so if you can get your team members working together as a team, hey, we're in this together. Hey, you know what? Sales is struggling. We're all going to lean in. Just like if somebody was having a bad day on a high performing sports team, everybody leans in. Hey, what do you need? How can I help? And when you've got all of your direct reports doing that, you're passing the leadership baton around.
Absolutely.
And you don't, frankly, my job's the easiest job. I don't have to be the smartest guy. I just have to be like, why do you want to do that? Okay, it makes sense to me. Let's pull everybody together that's like that has a stake in this, and let's figure it out. And then I ask a lot of questions to help them, the subject matter experts, figure out, get aligned, and then all I've got to do is follow up. Hey, how's that going? Hey, how's that going? Hey, wait, I see you working on this, but we talked about this. Mm-hmm. So in a way, I also get to play scorekeeper, like the scoreboard.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so in short, what I'm hearing, Jason, is it's starting to ensure that your culture is thinking about winning collectively as a team, not pitting your defense against your midfield, midfield against forwards, what have you. And if there's a loss, it's not the goalie's fault. It's a whole team that has to
lean
in, right?
How did it get to the goalie? You know what I mean? Like, where was the rest of the team? Right.
Absolutely.
We win together. We fail together. We get back up together.
We learn together. Yes, definitely. And the other thing that was coming up for me too, so playing devil's advocate, because we've all seen it, organizations where they want to desperately do great, but they just don't have the tools at that point in time to be great. So what do you say to the leaders out there listening to us or to the HR professionals out there with regards to, you know, if you do not have that mix of makeup and skills at this point in time, where do you start?
This is okay. This answer is not going to be super popular. You've heard all things are about people, process, and tools, like a balance of people, process, and tools. Mm-hmm. I've very rarely ever seen a proposal from a vendor or a manager that even remotely addressed the people side. It's all about process and tools. So here's what I teach. It's funny. When I go into my client organizations, I'm going in because they're not getting the results that they need. Right. And they always want a dashboard. They want to talk about tools. Here's the deal. Vision drives behavior. Behavior drives outcomes. I can give you a dashboard, but all the dashboard is going to tell you is what you know now anecdotally, that you're not winning, that you're failing. Right. And you will have spent a bunch of money and it will take us a couple of months. So we're not going to start with tools. We're going to start by teaching skills. We're going to start, by inculcating discipline, trust, transparency, and accountability. Those four things. They're like, hey, I have a project management problem. I have an operations problem.
Sorry, Jeff. I want to interrupt you again. Can you slow down and repeat that again for everybody? What are the top four?
Yeah. What I was saying is they call me and they say they have a project management problem or an operations problem. And I'm like, that's advanced. If you're not getting the results that you need, you don't have a culture of discipline, trust, transparency, and accountability. Those are the three things. Mm-hmm. And if you want me to help you, I absolutely can. But we're going to start with discipline.
Right.
They're always like, oh my God, we hate that word, like discipline. They're like, can you talk about work-life balance? Can you come in and talk about how to reduce stress? Can you talk about how to deal with burnout? I'm like, yeah, totally. Discipline. Absolutely. That's exactly, you called the right guy.
Because, I get where you're going. Yes.
Right. Like, hey, let's hold on. Let's write down everything that we're working on. Mm-hmm. Let's go through that, because the vast majority of things that people are working on, they're things that they think they should be working on. And when I ask them this question, tell me how that improves customer satisfaction, team member satisfaction, or profitability. I've never, ever had anybody on the client side be able to answer that question the first time I asked them.
No.
And if they can't.
We've done it this way, or I was told to, or it's in my job description.
Yeah. Hey, we have to, right? Hmm. And so my goal is always to transform divisions that operate as cost centers into growth partners for the business with a focus on both sides of the P&L. And here's the thing, in doing that, let's sit down, let's rationalize it. Let's make sure you're not just working, but that you're doing things that align with the mission of the company. And the mission of the company is always to improve customer satisfaction, team member satisfaction, and profitability. Those are the three. That's it. There's no reason to do anything that doesn't contribute to one of those three things, and never at the expense of the other. Mm. And the ones that do all three, that's a really big one. We should probably focus pretty heavily on that. And so when I get them to think differently, they then behave differently. And then at that point, now that they are winning already, I can move them into a tool and the tool will work for them.
Absolutely.
If I move them into a tool before we've even defined what their job looks like, before we've even, I don't even like to talk about business process architecting. It freaks people out. I'm just like, look, let me come in and help you develop a culture of trust or discipline, trust, transparency, and accountability. And in there, we're going to look at the ways that you're working. Mm. And in that, I know you got a bunch of high performing individuals that I'm going to have to help you turn into a team that respects discipline, trust, transparency, and accountability. Okay. And then we'll move into a tool. If I move you into a tool now, you're going to spend money, you're going to spend time, and then you're going to be frustrated that it doesn't work, and you're going to blame the tool when it's not the tool. This is why your tool implementations never work, because it's you. You're the problem. It's you, right? Like,
what would you say to organizations? Because I mean, like, a lot of us to subscribe to things like the EOS model or Scrum or Agile, and all of those things point to the tools and have embedded habits, but it's not clear around the human-centric habits that you have to have, which you've listed, nailed it on the head, essentially, Jason. How do you not undo that thought process for organizations, but how do you add that human-centric approach? And by the way, it needs to come first before your EOS or your Scrum, whatever.
It's really easy. It actually is really easy. And EOS, the reason people adopt it is because they heard it work somewhere, because it did. Agile, people adopted it because it worked somewhere, because it did. Enterprise project management, we can go through all the different toolkits out there for ways of working. Where they're not working, it's because they don't have a culture first of discipline, trust, transparency, and accountability. Mm-hmm. Where they do work is that they've already crossed that threshold. They had something that was working. Here's the big no-no is you're not getting the outcomes you think you need. We should be agile. You're getting your butt kicked at school. So you want to jump straight to the black belt. You can't jump straight to the black belt. You got to show up, right? Like you go to the dojo, you work out, you wax on, you wax off, you paint the fence, and then maybe you get like a yellow belt, right? Yes. And so, hey, we're not getting the outcomes that we think we need. We want to do something super complex. It's not going to work. So start with developing good habits. And by the way, you said, how do I change it? It's very simple. I ask, okay, so why do you want to implement DevOps? Why do you want to implement Agile? Why do you want to implement Scrum? Why do you want to implement EOS? The answer is always going to be because I'm not getting the results that I think that I need. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, cool. What did you do before? You're calling me EOS. What were you doing before? It's going to be another like label. It's going to be like another shiny object. And I'm going to be like, how did that work? Well, it didn't work. Well, and I'm going to ask, why didn't it work? Well, apparently Scrum doesn't work. Agile doesn't work.
They blame it on the tool. They don't.
They blame it on the tool. And I'll be like, okay, fine. What were you doing before that? No, I mean, here's the sad, sad, sad truth. Any executive or manager that isn't getting the results that they think that they need, mm-hmm. there's a high degree of likelihood that they never have. That they go to the interview and they tell you that they were wildly successful in their last job. It's not true. It's generally mm-hmm. not at all true. Mm-hmm. And it was always the company's fault. It was always the tool's fault. Like Brené Brown tells us that, you know, blame is the discharging of discomfort and pain, but it has an inverse relationship with accountability.
Absolutely. Right.
And we've all failed at things. And until we own that, like, this is me. This is me. It's not the tool. It's not the thing. So what do I need to do to be an effective leader? Or here's the other thing. And by the way, when I say they're not succeeding, I don't mean right away. Because the people that have been successful before, if they inherit a new team or they get a new job, they know they are disciplined. They know how to cultivate trust, transparency, and accountability. And so they'll turn that team around. And that's effectively what we do. We go in and we teach managers how to do this. And if they haven't, if they're not doing it now and they need our help to do it, they really haven't ever done it. In every single case, it turns out that we've changed the trajectory of their and their team's careers.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And by the way, not knowing how to do something is not bad. Everybody will label it bad, but there's people that are going to be like, I can't believe he said that they've always been unsuccessful. Yeah. Because if they knew how to be successful, they'd be getting the outcomes that they think that they need. Mm-hmm. So it's an investment in people. Because it's always about the people, never about the tools. It's an investment in helping them see the world differently. Back to when we were talking about experiences when we first talked today, right? Like traveling, new experiences change the way that we see and think about the world.
Yes.
Right? So helping them get a couple of reps doing their leadership thing differently, because doing it the same way they've been doing it will yield the same results. And Einstein felt compelled to tell us that that's the definition of insanity.
Fair. Something's coming up for me, and I'm not certain how to ask this question, Jason, but for companies that fear change, or they don't have those top four skill sets at the top, and they don't always see the value in investing in humans. It's like, well, I don't have time, or the board is pressing us to get money, or we don't have supply logistics because of XYZ. And, you know, it's a crisis for us in our organization. Don't have time for training. Don't have time for this. What would you say to those types of remarks or that mindset in today's world?
So there's this sort of bad enough thing needs to happen, right? Like we need to be efficient. We need to do this thing. We don't have time to invest in people. That means that they're in a market somewhere where they can set money on fire, where they can rotate through human beings. The idea is that it's working. It might not be fun, but it's working and their shareholders are satisfied. Mm. In any other market situation, you'll go out of business. Mm-hmm. Right? And so often what has to happen is somebody has to basically have an existential crisis like I did, right? To want to go on that journey, or just realize, like, you're a manager and you're like, you know what? I keep doing the same things over and over. And, you know, and thank God my company keeps reorging. Otherwise, they would have figured it out that we're not getting the results that we think that they, I mean, that is the best way to hide everybody that's not getting the outcomes that they think they need is to reorganize your company.
Yep.
Right. And so they try and again, and so we'll meet them and they're like, you can help me? I'm like, yeah, it's all about you. We'll help you. We help them. And then somebody sees, like, what's that person doing? Like, what are they doing? If they don't know it's there, they don't know to ask for it, right? And so you've got all these big companies and these people that are really unhappy, but it works. They get their paycheck. The company's not going out of business. Mm-hmm. Nobody's shown them that there's a healthier, like, more emotionally satisfying way.
Absolutely.
That's the key.
Good. Good. I'm so happy to have you here with me today, Jason. And I know that we could talk for hours about this topic, but I know that you have to go. Tell us, where can we find you? What type of promos do you have going on currently? Anything else you want to share with us?
Yeah. No, thank you for asking that. I can be reached through jasonscottleadership.com. If anybody's listening and you have a leadership team that you want to infect with the ideas that I've presented here today, I'm happy to come in and give a 1 hour complimentary talk, because, you know, awareness is the first step to anything, right? Making people aware of the possibilities. And if it solves a problem that they think that they have, they'll be inspired to take action.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you so much again for being with us here today, Jason, and take good care.
Thanks, Ange.
Thanks for listening to the Human Side of Business podcast. I'm glad you could join us. If you enjoyed today's episode and want to stay updated with our latest content, make sure to visit our website. The link can be found in the episode description, where you can subscribe to the podcast, sign up for our newsletter, and learn more about our whole person leadership services. Sounds interesting? Explore the Whole Person Leadership Cohort by Intuity Performance, a unique program that offers unparalleled support to managers on every step of their leadership journey. Our program features evidence-based assessments, workbooks, group coaching, and interactive learning experiences to help you level up your leadership skills. Reach out today to apply to one of our upcoming cohorts. Until next time, take care and stay curious.